This is Secrets to Win Big, your roadmap to sustained growth. Brought to you by Arjun Sen, founder and CEO of Zen Mango, brand whisperer, top brand growth driver, and a former Fortune 500 executive who has been called one of the most marketing intelligent minds in the business. Find him at zenmango.com. And now, here's your host, Arjun Sen.
Welcome to Secrets to Win Big with Arjun Sen. This is Arjun welcoming you to this edition of Secrets to Win Big. You know, winning is always fun, but putting you on the path to long-term sustained success is what separates leaders from the super leaders. At this podcast, you'll hear from leaders from around the world and all walks of life. Today, my VIP guest is S. Sundi Sundaresh. And over the last 25 years, he has led organizations of 20 to 1500 people with revenues up to $1 billion. $1 billion with a B. But what impressed the heck out of me was his consistency at which he has won on the biggest stages of the corporate world, and that separates him. During his time, in his progressive, successful, diversified leadership experience, and as board members and CEO, general manager, and senior executives in development and growth of high-tech business, Sundi has always been about results, and I really am looking forward to how Sundi got there. His career to date can be summarized in very simple few words: successful in growing people, products, and companies. Let me repeat. Growing people, products, and companies. Welcome, Sundi.
Thank you, Arjun.
Sundi, you have had a very successful corporate career. Some of the big brands you have worked for and made an impact started with National Semiconductor Corp, Hewlett-Packard, Hyundai Electronics, Adaptec, Jetstream Communication, Zangatti, and Sinara Systems. So when I look back at all these years of success, what would be a few things that are the drivers for ongoing repeated big success?
So there are a few key business principles I follow. The first one, something that John Adler, the CEO at Adaptec, used to preach all the time: our paychecks come from our customers. The second is people make the difference. So I invest the time in hiring, recruiting, and retaining top talent. And the third one is challenging orthodoxy. Now, years ago, Gary Hamel wrote a book called Competing for the Future. And challenging orthodoxy is about looking at the constraints companies put on themselves. So when you think of yourself as a hardware company, for example, you don't think about software products. So those are some of the things that I held near and dear as I drove success. And of course, the foundation is giving your personal best in all circumstances.
So tell me a little bit more about challenging orthodoxy, about constraints. You know, can you get me any examples of breakthrough results when you challenged and the results just wowed you?
Yeah. So an example in corporate entrepreneurship. Adaptec, as a company that I was an executive at, was known for its hardware, very reliable hardware. In fact, customers referred to it as "it just works." And all of our business processes, our product thinking was around hardware products. Yet as I delved into it, we came across a situation where the heart of the problem we were solving for customers was really in our software. So we used that idea to create a software product and then followed that up, augmenting it with three different acquisitions to become a leader at that time in CD recordable or CD burning software. That business went from zero to 60 million during my tenure. And eventually later, Adaptec spun it out as a separate public company called Roxio that some may remember.
Yes.
But the heart of it was challenging the orthodoxy that we are a hardware company.
Absolutely. So you already shared with me quotes from some very inspiring leaders. And I bet, you know, you have had exposure and experience working with quite a few leaders. So could you help me understand one incident or one leader who has inspired you the most and how it has impacted you consistently all through your corporate world?
Give you a couple of examples on that score. When I was growing up, I was a space buff. I mean, I tracked the Apollo program throughout. And Apollo 13 was a disaster waiting to happen. But Jim Lovell, who was the commander, was cool, calm, and collected throughout this process, focused on the mission, and got the crew safely back to Earth. Of course, with the support of a great team in Houston behind him. But it showed me something about the demeanor, about the calmness in a crisis that has kept me going throughout. And I have a tendency to be very calm in all kinds of situations. On the corporate side, my first CEO at Adaptec, John Adler, incredible person. He was extremely demanding, very focused, with very clear goals, but he was unbelievably caring. So while he challenged you, stretched you, demanded the extreme from you, he was also there to support you to win. Mm-hmm. And those two I carried with me throughout. And I try to do the same with my teams.
So I want to, you know, push you a little bit on one word you touched on, being calm. So working with sports personalities at the highest level, what I learned is peak performance comes from being calm to the point where some of the top golfers have even told me that they even look at how much stress is on their shoulders, and that gives them no denying. So looking at you and the top sports personality, seeing this commonality, so what is calmness? Like, how do you get there in the corporate world? Like, what do you do? How do you get there?
Wow. I think it's something you practice, and a key part of it is a mindset which isn't about what if the worst happens, which then stresses you, but we'll see. Let's figure out how to tackle this. So it's just a mindset around we'll see a way out, as opposed to what if the sky falls on you. So that always opens up an avenue, a path to achieve or recover from a crisis, etc. So it keeps the stress away.
Love that. So you just heard it right here from Space Buff and Calm, Sundi Suntaresh. Is calmness is a mindset where you have the confidence that you will find a way out. Love that, Sundi. So Sundi, just want to push a little bit more on the leadership side. What are some of the most important traits in a leader, and how do they translate into big wins? Because, you know, corporate world is all about winning. So what are some traits that you see?
So I think of it as ice in the veins. I is for integrity. And integrity to me is consistency in your words and actions. It's in the ethics. It's in the fairness and equity, the way you treat people. So that holistically is integrity. That's something I expect from a leader. And all successful leaders seem to demonstrate that as well. The second is courage. The courage to make tough choices, to make difficult decisions. Because all of business is about making choices and decisions. And some of them don't appear favorable in the short term, but do have a benefit in the long term. And being willing to make those choices. You look at a couple of examples like Reed Hastings at Netflix. You know, switching to streaming from DVD distribution took a lot of courage. You know, it hammered his stock, but look at where the stock is today. Satya Nadella at Microsoft. I think he challenged tremendous orthodoxies within the company to transform it into a successful cloud company today. And it was a has-been along the way. And those are examples of executives who made some extremely tough choices, had the courage of conviction to follow through. And the last one is empathy. Empathy is about listening and caring about your people and your customers and their success. So the leaders who demonstrate those three, to me, are really strong leaders.
So empathy includes both listening to customers and team members.
Yeah.
And while you were talking about, you know, I use integrity, I remember me asking my grandma at an early age what integrity means, because integrity doesn't have any legal definition. It can have different definitions for different people. And my grandma, my Maiji, I used to call her Maiji, told me this beautiful thing is integrity is what you do when nobody is watching.
Yeah.
And you sleep beautifully at night with no regrets. You can always go back and make things better, but you have no regrets. And that part always stayed with me. And I really love the fact you started with integrity. So I want to go a little bit more on the people and the products. And I want to start with people, because thus far you've really talked about, you know, empathy, emphasizing, you know, building people. And everywhere you have worked, you have helped people grow. So what are some secrets for, from you, as Sundi has gone through his career, to help people grow, and also secrets to grow products?
Well, let's start with people, because they're my favorites. So one is the fundamental starting assumption that people come in wanting to do their best. So the goal is to create an environment where they can shine. And specifically, I like the approach of giving people stretch goals, giving people opportunities to do things they've never done before, and giving them clear ownership and accountability for that. And when you do that, chances are they'll stumble along the way, but you have to be there to support, guide, and mentor them. So that's kind of been my approach with people. In fact, I remember there was a situation where I promoted a person to be a general manager. She did not have a technical background, but she was incredibly effective as a manager, cutting through complexity, making great decisions. And so I recommended that she be promoted to be a GM of a product line. I got a lot of pushback from senior management saying, well, she doesn't have a technical background. I said, she may not have a technical background, but she makes amazing decisions and works great with people. Well, I promoted her, and she did a fantastic job and went on to become a very successful CEO. It's an example of giving people more than what they've done before and watching them stretch and thrive in that process.
And how about product?
The product's interesting. The traditional thinking around product is you deliver a compelling product that delivers value to customers and customers will come in. Within that set, there's the issue of driving an effective sales and marketing strategy to communicate that compelling, relevant value proposition. That's the traditional way you grow product. But beyond that, when you think about this, there are opportunities to grow in other channels, ways to reach customers that you hadn't thought of before. There are opportunities to grow through entering other geographies, but those are still with the same product and use cases. But one of the areas that I've been successful with is also thinking of brand new use cases of the same product. And that totally expands the pie. So not only are you just gaining share in an existing market, you're creating some new opportunities for yourself.
Got it.
And those are ways you grow. So an example there in a consumer setting would be Arm & Hammer, which we traditionally think of baking soda as something you use for baking, et cetera. They repackage it, put a few holes in it, and say, stick it in your refrigerator to keep it odor-free. Completely different use case drives new growth. In our case, we had a product that was traditionally used to connect to disk drives. We expanded that and said, let's find applications in connecting this with other peripherals, scanners, printers, CD-ROMs, et cetera. So created a different use case and expanded the opportunity, grew the product that way.
Nice. So I just want to follow up on especially new product development, because many a time I see brands getting stuck only listening to customers, because customers, I feel, can see from where they are.
Yeah.
Customers can react. Like if Steve Jobs went and asked people, I'll take all your CDs and put it in this tiny thing, people would have said, get out of here. Like, I don't. So how do you stretch it, take it to a few levels beyond?
Yeah.
And wow customers. Like, what has been your secret on new product development?
So that's a great question. And the short answer is you team up with brilliant people. But your point is valid. When you talk to customers, you get incremental innovations. You get suggestions for improvement on something they're already using. Mm-hmm. The Steve Jobs trick is to develop insights into the underlying unmentioned or unarticulated needs, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, people may not express it, but through the conversation, he is able to express and identify that unique need and create brilliant products. Mm-hmm. Frankly, I've not been able to deliver at that league. However, what I have done is team up with great founders, CTOs who have great ideas and help channel that and shape that to drive growth. But the heart of it is really being smart about sensing the what is not mentioned, mm-hmm. the heart of the problem, as opposed to the incremental, I need a few more widgets on this box and things like that.
And, you know, talking about success, let's now talk from success, move to failures. Because in the corporate world, I've seen many a times, we face situations where failure is nearly certain. Yeah. But leaders turn them around, and from there, they get to their biggest wins. Could you talk about a situation where something like that happened, but more importantly, how you got the team to see beyond and take them to the big win?
So I'll use an Adaptec example here, because that was probably where I faced the brink of failure. The first time around, the company was in a growth phase. And in that period, I grew a business from 90 to 400 million through multiple product lines and acquisitions, et cetera. Mm-hmm. The second time around, I joined as CEO. The company was in decline. And while we made some adjustments to get the cost under control, we had a new product line planned. It was, in fact, a family of products addressing a change in technology. And we knew that that was critical to the success and, frankly, survival of the company. While we were going through the development, one of our key sources, we were single source on a strategic component because nobody else made that. And that vendor decided that they were going to discontinue that line and gave us notice practically 3 months before our launch that they weren't going to put that particular semiconductor into production.
3 months.
Yeah. So we had a disaster on our hands. That meant we had an aging product line that we knew would slowly be declining in revenue and nothing to replace it because our key source had been cut off. So we did a scramble, a quick brainstorming session, and as a team identified what I'd call a two-chip solution to address it. Mm-hmm. It would cost more, but at least it would keep us viable in the market. So we would take a margin hit, but we wouldn't lose our space with the customer. Well, we couldn't wait. And typical cycle of development in these cases was like a year. Mm-hmm. And we couldn't afford to wait a year. That would be the death knell for the company. So I brought the team together. So it was about a crash program. A clear goal about we needed to do this redesigned product and this entire family within 6 months and assign the right people and said, look, you're accountable. I want you on board. And I know it's crazy, this timeline. So tell me what we have to do and what changes so that we can meet this particular schedule and deliver. The team signed up. And we executed. And believe it or not, we launched. It was the most incredible team effort, tremendous energy. And the best way to summarize this would be, you know, the London Tube phrase of mind the gap. Hmm. So it started with goal clarity. Mm-hmm. We need to get this product with a sense of urgency. Alignment of the team, getting everybody on board that this was a, you know, survive or death situation for the company. and then identify the right people and processes to make this happen. And that team had a straight line to me. So the message I gave the team was, anything that gets in the way of this project, they could escalate. I was ready to bump any other project along the way to make sure this happened. So that's what it took. And we actually delivered and got our revenues back on track.
And to me, it's very fascinating to hear these stories in the corporate world, because we hear these stories in the sports side. Like for me, the big learning from me, what as you shared, was clarity. You helped them focus, and you were there to break any barriers for them,
right,
to make them successful. You know, a very fascinating similar story is in the sports world, and Andre Agassi talks about his wife. Steffi Graf was playing Martina Navratilova and had lost the first set, I think 6-2, was done 5-1 with Martina to serve. And of course, that's the time in her mind, she thought the match is over. So she was there trying to pick up her, you know, equipment because it will be over in 5 minutes. And then Andre talks about all of a sudden she sees something flipped in Steffi Graf. Without even finishing the whole break, Steffi comes back and she was literally raring like a lion or a lioness in a cage waiting for the serve. Steffi made the biggest comeback of all times to win in three sets. And later on, when she was asked, she said that all through the second set, she was getting upset at herself for being playing the worst ever. But all of a sudden, down 1-5 on the second set, she realized she has created the biggest opportunity in tennis ever. Because she said that she didn't know, but most probably nobody has ever come back. And even if you come back, you are coming back against the best female tennis player of all times. And she said, I could not give up on this opportunity without trying my best. Yeah. And again, I think that's the part where, you know, what you also showed me, the same thing was clarity of the opportunity and trying your best, which I really think is really unique on both worlds. So now I want to take you from the corporate side of performing to the other side. You know, all through, you must have had, you know, amazing relationships, but sometimes frustration too with board members on why they don't get it. So when Sundi moves to a successful board career with companies like Gridgrain, Sandforce, Inc., what changed? Like when you sat on the other side of the table, what was different?
Well, what was different was the need to shift the natural tendency. So when you're an executive, you're accountable, you're thinking about strategy and operational execution. But 80% of your effort, if you think of the classic 80-20, 80% is in the operational execution. Mm-hmm. When you shift to the board, it's flipped. Mm-hmm. You're not worried. You're still accountable. You're still holding the CEO accountable, just like you're holding a team accountable. Mm-hmm. But you're not worried day to day on operations. So the thinking shifts to more of a strategic conversation, an advisory conversation. Mm-hmm. So there's a difference between a CEO working with a team where it's a lot more operational. Sometimes it's advisory, sometimes it's intervening, and sometimes in a crisis it's micromanaging. But as a board, your role is to hire and fire the CEO, hold the CEO accountable for results, and provide strategic guidance and advisory. So again, it's a mindset shift on being comfortable with an advisory role as opposed to a hands-on operational role.
And you being a people person, now that you have moved to strategic advisory guidance, how do you inspire people? How do you grow people sitting on the other side of the table?
Being accessible. So the very first board role I had was at Sandforce. Mm-hmm. And Sandforce was a semiconductor company. And the CEO was a first-time CEO. Now, incredibly receptive guy, open to learning. He was a sponge. He had no trouble acknowledging what he didn't know. And he would seek advice from everybody. Mm-hmm. As a board member, familiar with this industry and the business models, et cetera, I would spend time outside the board with him on a regular basis, being a sounding board, both with him and his executives. The company went on to be a great success, had a fantastic exit. I think it had the best exit of a startup in 10 years, a semiconductor startup in 10 years. But the key was being accessible and being a non-threatening sounding board to the person.
So Sunil, that's like, you know, everything you taught me today and shared with the audience are amazing nuggets over the last 25 years. So now if Sundi from today could go back and talk to Sundi at the beginning of his career, what would be a few pieces of advice Sundi would give for the young Sundi ready, raring to go in the corporate world?
I actually say only one thing, frankly, and that is do not set limits on what you can achieve. It's fascinating. Our own boundary conditions limit what we think is possible. And the reality is, if you put the effort and the focus, anything is possible. Yeah. The Sundi of who came into this country never dreamt he'd be CEO and did not even plan a set of actions to be CEO. It took a few other incidences that opened that opportunity up. But if I were to go back, I wouldn't even have set that limit.
To finish, you know, any leader I look at, I just realize that people, leaders like you, have sustained success, have a process. Because success, that is a process and a plan, only that success can be repeated. Otherwise, it's just like winning a lottery and becoming rich.
Yeah.
So to me, I always want to understand a leader like you, how do you start your day? What's the first thing you do? And what's the last thing you do when you are, you know, finishing your workday? Is there a routine or a pattern that you want to share with the audience?
Well, there's a routine. Actually, I start even before getting out of bed. When I wake up, I say a small prayer. That loosely translates into giving thanks for the knowledge and resources I have gained and seeking his blessing and grace to be effective with those resources and knowledge during the day. And then I follow that up with some meditation, go on a brisk walk, and then the rest of the normal day follows. And I close the day, I thank him for helping and supporting me during the day. To me, this is more a practice in building a sense of humility, to recognize that our success is really the result of our individual efforts, supported by the collective efforts of team, family, society, and nature. I mean, all of these come together to make each one of us successful.
So Sundi, what's the best way audience members can reach you? A URL, email, where can they find you?
The easiest way is LinkedIn. So I am on LinkedIn. It's LinkedIn.com/IN/SundiSundaresh, which is one word.
Sundi Sundaresh, S-U-N-D-I, Sundaresh, S-U-N-D-A-R-E-S-H.
Correct.
Sundi, this has been such an amazing pleasure. Personally, and of course, everybody listening would love this. What you took me today are incredible number of nuggets, but the few things that really stood out to me is challenge the orthodoxy that is there, challenge the constraints. And you also finished there when you were giving advice to the young Sundis, do not set limits to what you can achieve because you will never achieve things that you think you can't. What you took me through are the three pieces, integrity, courage, and empathy. And the empathy was the string that I felt was the thread that was connected all through on how you believe in people, trust people, invest in people, and also at the end, your humility, where there was a spiritual side to it, but also there was humility and respecting others' accomplishments because that's what a team is. And finally, the thing that you also helped me look at was the whole switch of roles. Once you become a board member, you're still caring. You're not detached. You're still passionate there. But at the same time, you're becoming an accessible sounding board to help the other person be the best they can be. Sundi, again, thank you. This is really fascinating. So all the listeners, thank you for listening to Secrets to Win Big with Arjun. For those of you listening on Facebook, I would request you to please like this, share this, forward with friends, and looking forward to bringing you more secrets from incredible leaders like Sundi Sundaresh. Sundi, thank you again.
Thank you, Arjun. It's been a pleasure.
You've been listening to Secrets to Win Big with Arjun Sen, founder and CEO of Zen Mango, brand whisperer, top brand growth driver, and a former Fortune 500 executive who has been called one of the most marketing intelligent minds in the business. To learn more, visit www.zenmango.com. Share this podcast with your friends and subscribe wherever you like to listen to podcasts. This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.